following is a presentation of the Match Talk Podcast Network.
Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant, and I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO and, of course, on the web at worldwrestlingresource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall. Episode 29 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. Jason Bryant here with you and joined today by Dennis Hall, Greco-Roman world champion, and coach extraordinaire, and also joining us on the call is the former director of the national teams at USA Wrestling, current volunteer assistant coach at his alma mater, the University of Wisconsin, Mitch Hall. Today, we're going to be talking a couple things about Mitch's experience within USA Wrestling and college wrestling as a whole, get a take on the recent hire of Bill Zadek as the new men's freestyle coach that came down on June the 1st. But first, before we get to that, Mitch, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. I enjoy the opportunity to talk to you.
So let's just get some background here and let everybody know, in case you were under a rock, on June 1st, Bill Zadek, who had been the assistant freestyle national coach for a number of years, was one of the finalists, and he was picked to be the man who will succeed Bruce Burnett, who stepped in for a two-year role after Zeke Jones left to take the role at Arizona State, the head coaching job there. And Mitch, you've been in the national teams director position, or had been in the national teams director, and you'd had to oversee a lot of hiring of coaches. From now an outside viewpoint, what are your thoughts on how the process went, and based on your knowledge of how hiring typically went at USA Wrestling?
Well, I had talked a lot with Les about this, and Rich Bender too. I mean, those guys are still close friends of mine, and actually told him, you know, sometimes it is pretty good to have left this job and not have to do that, because hiring a coach is a lot different than hiring, you know, somebody in these other business fields, and that the guys that you are interviewing for this job are people that you're working with, have been working with, you want to continue to work with, and all likely have the ability to do a great job at it. And so it's a very difficult thing to come down with that final decision, but I certainly support the decision that they've come down with Bill Zadek, a great individual. He will represent this country extremely well. Technically, he is outstanding, and I just look forward to, you know, working with Bill going forward. I think it's an excellent hire. So there were some other individuals I think could have done a great job as well.
Dennis, getting the Greco viewpoint, Bill Zadek's a guy that's preached freestyle and Greco-Roman at the youth level, saying he always wrestled both styles before he eventually focused on freestyle. From a Greco-Roman standpoint, and you see Bill Zadek now in this role where, you know, he's no longer the guy that's just going to be the guy in the trenches getting a little bit of credit. He's going to be getting a lot of the credit. He's going to be getting a lot of the pressure on him. But from a Greco-Roman standpoint, I'm assuming you've got to like this hire too.
Yeah, I do. I think you know, he'll keep guys, possibly maybe some freestyle guys that would be better off wrestling Greco. He might be able to help push them in towards the Greco position. So, yeah, I definitely like it. I talk with Bill a lot. You know, when we were on at the World Championships a few times. So it's good to know that they got somebody like him.
Mitch, let's circle back to you here. You're now back in the college trenches. You spent some time coaching at your alma mater prior to going to Purdue as an assistant and then the head coach before going to USA Wrestling. What is it about the game of college wrestling that changed from the last time you were on the sidelines until when you came back to Wisconsin?
Well, I think what you're seeing a lot more of, and it's interesting, I had this discussion a little bit with Kevin Jackson just a couple of weeks ago, in some of the techniques that are slightly different. Now, nothing's been invented or hasn't been done before, but it's what's being emphasized. And, you know, certainly what you see a big difference in which hurts us in the international part is you see a lot more guys with all of the funk that's going on when you just guy shoots a single and they dive over the top and roll through and that. And that's solid technique. I mean, I call it technique because you really understand it. It's not these guys are going to those positions on purpose and know what they're doing. That's not something that was really done when I was coaching 20 years ago, and certainly 70s and 80s. You can look back and see a little bit of it, but it was a hard sprawl, and not a lot of people do that well anymore. And by going to the rolling around, it hurts us internationally. So it's an adjustment there that works great in folk style, and you see it so much now. But it's certainly not it hurts us in our efforts with freestyle. But, you know, outside of that, you know, wrestling's wrestling in folk style. It hasn't changed that dramatically. It's just what's being emphasized.
You had mentioned that the style of wrestling that we do in certain situations hinders our freestyle. When you've got your folk style purist, then you've got your freestyle purist, you've kind of got there's a split there in terms of people that think we should go freestyle because it'll help our Olympic programs. And then we got people like, no, well, we don't need the Switzerland determining where our rules come from. You've been on both sides of the fence in terms of knowing coaching college athletes and then being in part of the freestyle and Greco-Roman product. Why do you think there's this thought process that the United States, with, you know, how stubborn we are, not going to the metric system, using all sorts of things that are different. We drive on one side of the road. Some people drive on the other. Why do you think there's such a steadfast opposition from some people to say, we don't need to be a freestyling Greco-Roman country. We should keep it the way it is.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Dennis can even speak to this. I wrestled, you know, 10 to 12 years before Dennis did, and or maybe even about 15, but I can go back to the 1970s, and there was talk about why don't we go to freestyle. I mean, it's been a 40-50 year discussion, and I think there's several reasons why, and I think one of it is the comfort level as well, because, you know, if we just step and go right to freestyle, if we just made that call, you've got about 70% of the coaches out there, when you talk about grade school all the way up through college, that wouldn't be comfortable with their technical knowledge. And I'm not saying that negatively. They just haven't been involved that way. They're very technical in the sport of folk style. The other part is there's no, in order to have change, and, you know, and that came through the greatest example of what required change is when we were going to be dropped from the Olympics. You need to have such great discontent that change is driven. And there's not really a great discontent in the folk style world. There's a vocal minority, but the reality is most people are comfortable and it is what it is. And I think it's a great style for us in our country. And, you know, JC, you've been around as well. There are folk styles in all of these countries across the world. There's some kind of folk style in their country.
Dennis, I want to get your thoughts on that, since we're talking, oh, we should switch to freestyle. Are you, you're sitting there going, hey, where's the Greco discussion?
A little bit. Not too bad, though.
And Dennis, and before you go, that's the flip side of it, is that people say, well, go to freestyle. Well, then what happens to Greco? Hey, let's go to one style internationally and make it freestyle. Well, half of the countries would say out there say, no, let's make it Greco. So, you know, there's a lot of confusion within that or where we should go. We all think it should be freestyle if you took the majority of people in this country. But Dennis could tell you internationally, there's more people that wrestle in the world championships in Greco and more countries involved than there is freestyle.
That's true.
Now, Dennis, I'm going to spin that question the other way, just to not seem like I'm beating an international style drum here. The benefits of having our American folk style system in this country versus having it as a freestyling Greco in the high school and in youth levels.
You know, thing about folk style is it's a grind. And I think it teaches a mentality of always fighting. And so folk style has some benefits. I just wish we could get more kids to do the freestyle and Greco, because our country could be a lot tougher internationally. I mean, we're doing pretty good right now, but, you know, if we get more kids competing, it's only going to raise the level of expertise. So one of the things I think folk style really helps out with, too, is the ability for our guys to always be in the matches because of their awareness with how many matches we compete. I think competition overall at our youth level, a lot of kids compete too much. But I think with all our matches that our kids get compared to international athletes, we have a lot more matches, so we're able to kind of not exploit the rules, but we're just more match savvy in a lot of cases. So it is a good thing that we have folk style.
I'm going to spin it back to Mitch, and you had alluded to the discontent that kind of led to the rule changes. I mean, we got kicked out of the Olympics in 2013. We're back in. We've got a better rule set, one that resembled the wrestling prior to 2005. And we had those awful tennis style, you know, I call it the binary code of wrestling, where we had matches that were going 0-1, 1-0, 1-0. And it was just extremely, I mean, even especially in Greco, and Dennis knows this, that it was some of the Greco with that 0-1, 1-0, 1-0 stuff with the force. It was just like, okay, we might have gotten some good throws that first year with the reverse lift, but after that it became everybody knew how to game the system. So we've got big rule changes in 13. You were there when all this stuff was going down, and we've got new leadership in what's now known as United World Wrestling. So Mitch, just take us through the timeline there. From your vantage point when you were sitting at USA Wrestling, of this whole ordeal, what led to rule changes and how we sit with leadership internationally?
Yeah, and to go through that and be to get people to completely understand, we would need 2, 3, 4 hours, and Jason, you know that as well, to really completely do it. But the surface-wise, there's certain things. One is to get people to want to understand is that it's a technicality in that, but we were never kicked out. We were always still in. We were able to prevent that from happening. But we were certainly the sport on the chopping block. But the reality was it came down to, and a lot of people wanted to blame USA Wrestling or some other national federation. You know, I've got no axe to grind, not in there defending anybody anymore. But this was solely on the leadership of FILA. This had, you know, we didn't even know we were, some of the things they weren't doing because Raffi Martinetti wouldn't let people get involved. To not have somebody on the International Olympic Committee board because, and we had an opportunity to have it because, you know, Raffi just held other things so tight, is just unacceptable. And the idea of, well, every 6 years there's an election, you can get rid of somebody. That's not very easy to do. And in fact, the best way to explain that is from the years I started wrestling in the mid 70s until we got rid of Raffi Martinetti in 2013. So you're going from 75 to 2013, there were two presidents of the International Federation. Once you got in, you got yourself insulated. And if you tried to overthrow somebody, and that's what, why didn't USA Wrestling do that? Well, you know, we were positioned, but the thought was, you know, and you go back to that is, which group of athletes do you want to sacrifice? Because if it doesn't work, they're going to pay the price out on the mat. And so it was a very difficult thing to do, and it was just hard to get anybody to buy in completely, though everybody wanted it to happen. Well, when you're going to get kicked out of the Olympics, nobody then cares. That consequence is nothing compared to losing your sport in the games. And so I think the United States with Russia and you know, Iran and these countries understood that our sport needed a change. And it was Stan Dezik's leadership that really got it started on the international board as our representative. And he was smart enough. I believe Stan could have been president of of the organization, but he was smart enough to know that the best chance we had to get our sport back in was to not be led by the United States or Russia or Iran, some big country that is powerful, but to get somebody else. And Nanette Lalovic did a phenomenal job. And I think there's great leadership right now within the UWW. The thing that has happened is he's willing to listen for change. And the first thing they got rid of, and you point out, was what in the world does a ball grab do within wrestling? And Gary Abbott put it as best as he could. He said that ball grab now has gone to the scrap heap of history. And we've changed things, and a lot of the rules are back to the early, late 70s, early 80s, when there was more scoring. And I certainly think we've got much more exciting matches in Greco and freestyle today because of
it. We talked about Nanette Lalovic, and, you know, he had a little bit of a wrestling background because his kids wrestled, but he was he's a business guy. And do you think it was a smart move to have a business guy, not necessarily a referee or a former athlete, running the International Federation?
Well, I think it was, let's put it this way, you only had 21 people you could choose from, because they were on the bureau right then. And he was the best move, and absolutely proved that out. He had, his family had a diplomatic background. I mean, he had the skill set to do this. He had the personality to do it. It wasn't about his, you know, ego. It was about our sport. And I think, you know, we hit the jackpot with that guy, and I'm still a huge supporter of him. I may disagree on a couple little things, but those are minor. My only concern is the same as the executive director at USA Wrestling, Rich Benders, is this guy's health's not great. He's a big man, and we need him around longer than he may be around.
We're going to switch gears a little bit, because this is still continuing on the international style and the international wrestling landscape. Recently, we had some shenanigans at the Russian Nationals, and there were accusations and, you know, basically people alluding to and alleging that there was money involved in determining who was going to make the team. Some of the calls, especially in the Lebedev-Muskayev match, which really led to the entire enclave of Dagestan pulling out of the rest of the tournament. It put the tournament on hold. And there's been these rumblings of corruption. And, you know, it even goes back to the 70s with the former USSR knowing how to manipulate the black mark system. And, Mitch, what have you seen over the years that's been kind of abundantly, you know, not talked about it? I mean, it's one of those things. We've seen it with stories of Kerry Kolat getting his matches overturned, and Kerry McCoy, and just numerous. I mean, we focus on it as Americans because those are fresh in our mind. But being on the international scene, what has been done to kind of quell and crush that corruption element that seemed to have been following the FILA era around?
Yeah, and I guess I'm probably not as popular in with some of the athletes and things with regard to saying that it was done on purpose and screwed. I think Kerry Kolat got posed, and Kerry McCoy, absolutely. Do I think it was all corruption? No, I don't. I think it was, the system was bad with regard to overturning matches. And I do have to give Rafi some credit, because he did recognize that, heck, we can't be boxing. You're at the Olympic Games. You can't have that kind of stuff. And so he did change. You know, the referees got assigned randomly instead of before the session, where you then knew who was going to be refereeing. If the guy was, you know, of bad character, you could get to him. Well, that got eliminated. And then they finally, after Kolat got hosed again with this, you went to, if you overturned the match, then you re-wrestle it instead of just overturning it. And now we've got to the point where I think, you know, with technology, that you've got the best solution. You can challenge, it gets reviewed, and then whether you agree or not, it's over. You know that it's done, and you got to just move on from there. And so there's been some things that have really helped. But as far as, if you want to talk about throwing matches and things like that, I have to, this is where I will agree. I've certainly seen matches that I have no doubt in my mind were paid off, and normally it's with the Cubans. And I say that, but I mean, Dennis has seen Lopez wrestle at heavyweight. That man can't be beat. Yeah, okay, when he's at his peak.
He's got a few losses.
Yes, he does have a few losses, but he can't be beat.
Okay. Yep.
But I do not, and we had another one, Romero, before. But here's the thing is that it's not, I don't blame the Cubans. I mean, my guess is you got $40,000, $50,000, something like that. And what $40,000 can do for a family in Cuba, I'm not going to judge that. If you want to change that, you throw out the people that are paying, not the ones that are getting paid.
Dennis, you know, Mitch talked about Lopez, and there's been questions on whether he was on the take in Turkey back in 2011.
No doubt he was. I mean, I say
so
it
Dennis,
like
you're
I
not
see
saying
it.
It's a question.
There's no question involved. It was a fact. I mean, there's no way he loses that match.
But what about your experiences as an athlete and maybe seeing something questionable? It's like, wait a minute, how aware were you this as an athlete, knowing that, okay, this is a situation where it looks like this might be against me. I'm going to have to be 3 or 4 points better than I normally would be to kind of even offset and take that out of the equation if it was an officiating situation. Or, you know, what about a situation where maybe you knew an athlete was like, all right, well, he's definitely not doing what I thought he would do after I just wrestled him.
You know, I think for me it was I had that mindset every single match because I didn't trust any of the officials when I was competing. World Championships in Poland, I scored a legitimate takedown in the middle of the mat, should have ended the match. I should have won the match. I ended up losing the match. They end up going back into their rooms, reviewing it. I don't know if I'm going forward or going backwards. And make a long story short, they got the call right. But on the mat, I got the other guy got his hand raised. But, sometimes they fix it, sometimes they don't. And the part that I hate with all this is when the athletes get screwed. And,
yep. No matter what country.
Part. Exactly. I just want the best guy to win.
And Jason, let me speak to Dennis in that I can verify the mental toughness. I use him a lot as an example. But back then, I remember I called Dennis a couple of times just to say, hey, Dennis, is there something I can do to piss you off here, quote unquote? Because I said, I know how good you are when you're mad. And so he laughed about that. But the year he won the World Championships in 95 was probably one of the greatest championships. I think, was it 5 individuals you wrestled that were past world or Olympic champions? That's all he had every round to win a title.
4 out of 5.
Yep. I mean, it's just amazing what he went through. You know, and the next closest I say was Kevin Jackson. I think Kevin had 3. And Dennis had 4 out of his 5 matches.
Well, even last year at the World Championships, just to win a bronze medal, Andy Bisek and Greco had to beat 3 straight world champions. So, I mean, even the gold medal runs, you've got that. You've got that with the bronze medal runs.
Yeah.
No, I'm with Dennis in that, you don't see people on the take that up because it has to be in the championship match. It has to be from one of the countries that are willing to pay. And it needs to be from a country that's willing to accept. And there's not that many that would give up. You know, the Cubans usually don't give it up until after they've won a world title. But for Lopez, what's his 4th or his 5th world title? Not much difference to him.
But with the Olympics coming up, in your experiences, do you see maybe some of these questions? And I say that, questions, as Dennis might say it one way, you might say it another, but from where I said, I got to call it a question. The questions kind of go away more so in the Olympic years, or are there more of those questions arising during the Olympic years? I'll throw that to Mitch first.
Sure, I say there's less. I have yet to see somebody throw the Olympic gold medal. That still has got a lot of value, just personally, to these individuals. And it's usually, you don't normally see these kind of things in the other rounds, because winning from the first round to the second round isn't a big deal. You know, it's you've got to get to where you're going to get a medal before any of this really comes into play, and likely before you get to the gold. And I just haven't, I can't say that I have seen that at the Olympics. Maybe somebody else thinks they have.
Now, with the Olympics discussion, back in the games, full bore, you know, Tokyo coming up 2020 after Rio. And as we get to Rio, the discussion now really centralizing on the weight classes, the number of participants. Prior to the new new leadership at the IOC, it was a rigid quota. There's questions about what is a discipline, what is a core sport. People saying, well, why does track and field and swimming get multiple athletes per event per style, whereas wrestling gets one? We're down to six weights in three different styles. The discussions that the United States was involved with in bringing wrestling back, it had to sacrifice before you could move forward. Do you see the IOC, in your experience, is saying, all right, let's consider adding some more weight classes here for freestyle and Greco-Roman? The women's development still has to get there. Six is a great start. They can probably get to eight. Do you think eight would be more equitable, even though there's still eight more opportunities for men to compete than women? And you know that the IOC is big on gender equity as well.
Yes, me that.
Yes.
Yeah, I think, listen, we've always, from the beginning when they were cutting, you know, and even FILA, I mean, was in the position where, hey, you know, I think when we went this, the first cut, I don't think they were prepared. They thought they were going to get women in right away, and it didn't work initially. It had to, you know, we were 4 years later. But what you really need to have to look at is, are they willing to change? And under new leadership, maybe they are, because before, they set a target number of how many athletes are in the Olympics and then how many medal opportunities there are. And they capped that at a number, because what we, certainly FILA and USA Wrestling had presented with that to them was that, you know, we don't have to go to six. We're willing, can we take eight, but then only have the same number of athletes in? So instead of having 20, you have 16, you know, and they said, no, that added more medal opportunities. I'm hoping that changes, because we're willing to work within our number if you give us more medal opportunities. Certainly, Jason, you pointed out, is that we all think we still have to look at it the way the IOC overall looks at it. That there's still, right now, there are 12 men's opportunities and six women's. Whether that's, we got three, we just haven't had two styles. I'm hopeful that they're willing to listen now going forward, because I do know there's some change there that we could maybe expand our medal count, but not our number of participants.
Yeah, because one thing, you know, the double bronze is something I think that judo, I believe fencing also might do it in the combat sports. And, you know, most of the fans, it seemed like they go, well, why don't we just, you add more weight classes and get rid of the double bronze. I have a format that I put out a couple years ago that would kind of expand the repechage to the wrestlers. You lose to the guy that makes the semis, and I've actually filled out the bracket. You can actually place to eight places for world championships. You can say, okay, there's the eight. We saw this year with the problems the United States had in qualifying certain weight classes. It wasn't just the U.S. There's some other hammer countries that didn't get athletes through because there are limits, 18, 19 per weight, not counting the wild cards or the what's given from the tripartite or whatever it's called. I can't get that word right. But, you know, we're seeing that. Do you think there would be a move away from the double bronze anytime soon?
I don't think if you went double bronze or bronze, it makes no difference. That doesn't change anything, because that part, it's adding an entirely new weight class. You know, it doesn't change. You know, that's the difficult part. The issue of whether we have two bronzes or one, I think, you know, initially didn't like, but I think it was a good move. It provided more medal out there, but it doesn't change the medal opportunities as far as the IOC is concerned, because medal opportunities are basically number of weight categories that we compete, not the number of bronze medals we'll give out. So I think giving up the two bronze, if you only want to have a bronze because you're more of a purist, that's okay. But if you think giving up the other bronze will get us another opportunity at another weight, those two won't correlate.
one topic I want to talk about, and it goes a little, it's not off the rails of what we're discussing, but there's another issue internationally, and it involves a situation in men's freestyle at 74 kilos in India, where you have a two-time Olympic medalist and a world champion, Sushil Kumar and Narsingh Yadav. They're currently in the high court in Delhi right now, as we record this, that there's an argument on who should get the spot, and India doesn't hold the traditional trials like we do, or even the Russian nationals, or, you know, Iran hosts an Olympic trials. Canada has their format. Most countries have a nationals or a trials format. In India, Sushil Kumar hasn't competed since 2014, and he did so at 74 kilos in the Commonwealth Games, which most wrestling people know isn't the strongest in terms of depth. But now he wants to take the shot. He hasn't been on the mat in 2 years competitively, whereas Narsingh Yadav placed fifth in the world's bronze medalist last year, qualified the weight class, won the quota for India at the weight, and now they're in court. And I want to just circle back to the court situation, because we had one in 2000 with our current Greco-Roman coach, Matt Lindland, and Keith Siraki, that really got drug out and drug out and drug out. And from a national team's perspective, these type of things can really splinter and shatter cohesiveness within a national federation. And Mitch, from what you've experienced within USA Wrestling, how do you think other countries should handle a situation where a guy's got an Olympic, he's got two Olympic medals, and he feels like he should have a wrestle off for the spot after it's already been qualified by somebody else?
Yeah, and I was right in the middle as the national team director at that time with regard to the Lindland Siraki issue, and the internet and the U.S. Olympic Committee completely changed their arbitration process because of that one case, for all sports, and because they learned a hard lesson on their process, as we all did. Because I still, to this day, this is not a Matt Lynn and Keith Siraki issue. It was a procedure, and I still, to this day, don't understand how the court outside came with that decision that they did. But that's the issue. Is right now is because India doesn't have a trial system, they're in court. Okay, I mean, they weren't clear enough on this, and I know Kumar, he's one tough son of a gun. I think he'd do great. They got two really good guys. And they just didn't have a trial system. They're not developed that well in their structure, and they've really come on strong recently. And so the reality is this, they hadn't thought through all of these processes and where they could go. And now they're paying for it. And I believe they'll still, I did read about this one just recently, and, you know, they're trying to say that it'll screw them up, these guys, because they'll have to wrestle, and then they won't, you know, they're peaking at the wrong time, and that, heck, we're still plenty far out that they could wrestle and get ready. We actually try to compete 6 weeks out prior to the Olympic Games or the World Championships. You know, Dennis was on those as well, where we just didn't want to have that big gap. It was more of a tune-up, so... I think where they are is they're in a mess because they didn't foresee it, and hopefully that never happens again.
Dennis, you've been following that at all? What's your opinion?
It's for me, I haven't been following it, to be honest, but you know, it's tough right now. Based upon the way they had their goal set up, it's tough. Unless you have a trials, you don't know who should be wrestling. And I've always favored the trials, just because handpicking a guy because maybe you think he's better. I don't know. Guys train their whole life not to be handpicked. They train their whole life to earn a spot.
I'm with Dennis. We talked about that. You know, hey, we're going to do the Russian way. That's our old way, by the way. You pick things and that, and I'm going... And even Stan Dezik, who was the national coach at one time, you know, come and say, hey, be careful what you want, because sometimes it's not always best. And we've had plenty of examples of guys making the team and doing better than we thought they would do. And so it's not up to us to determine. And Dennis, 100% right. The best thing you can do is, you know, have that, you have the trials, have the wrestle off, and even if maybe that wasn't necessarily people think it was the best guy, they earned it out there on the mat.
Yeah.
I'm just going to throw my – I've been kind of not silent on my opinion. I've kind of hinted with the thing with the Yadav thing is he has medaled or placed in the top five in 9 international tournaments since 2013. He's been active. He wrestled in the Indian Pro League. Kumar hasn't been on the mat in 2 years and has only been at the weight class one event. And it's like he skipped out on all the hard stuff. Oh, he was citing injury. The fact that he didn't wrestle in the Indian Pro League was kind of like, okay, moving up a weight class. And to sit there and let Yadav go through all the strenuous processes and then say, I want a trial after he'd qualified the weight and had been continuing to wrestle well. That's the one thing where I'm kind of questioning. It's like, where have you been? Okay, you've been at training camps in Georgia or training with your coach, but you haven't been actively competing. And I think the difference is if you're actively competing and there's no trials process and you're still winning medals and performing, that's one thing. I think this is a little different because he hasn't been competing. If a guy's cited injury all the time, you want to put a guy that's injury prone, in his own words, in a situation where you could win a medal. I mean, Yadav has, Jordan Burroughs has talked about how tough that guy is. So, I mean, I'm looking at it going, okay, you've won 2 medals and you just expect to get a 1 match. I say, okay, if they're going to make a trial, you make it 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 5. You make it clear that you've done great things for he's an icon in India. I just think to come in at the last second and let Yadav do all the work to get the weight qualified and say, oh, I want a trial. I think that's the one thing I'm having the biggest question with.
Well, certainly, however, we don't know all the procedures that they have written and what's allowed and what isn't. And obviously, it's not completely clear because they're in court.
Dennis, your thoughts?
My thoughts is, like you said, two out of three or 3 out of 5 if they end up having to wrestle off. You know, I'd be extremely upset if I was the number one man and it was happening to me. Hopefully they figure it out. I wouldn't be so nice. You guys know that. But, I just feel bad for the wrestler that's number one right now. Invested all the time, done all the work, qualified the weight class, and could be taken away from them. It's horrible. That should never happen.
And the point being there, too, and it's a good point Dennis just said, he's the number one guy. I tell you what, if they do have the opportunity to wrestle, mentally it's going to be much harder for him because it's like you're taking something away from him compared to the other guy who's got an opportunity to get it.
Yeah.
When you have those kind of mentalities, that's why when we did it, it was very hard. You know, Saraki was on the team and Lindland got an opportunity to get it. You know, the guy getting the opportunity is going to be, you know, just put yourself in those roles and think of which guy is going to have the mental advantage there. I'm going to be fired up as heck if you give me an opportunity. But if you're putting me on the spot of something I believe I've already earned and make me redo it, that's pretty tough.
2 months out from Rio, Mitch, you had touched on this a little bit earlier about the peaking and the competitive nature. And Dennis, I'm going to start with you here on this because you've got an athlete, you coach Ben Provisor, that's on the team. What is his training plan going in? And what was your training plan going into the games? And how many weeks out were you looking to compete, making sure you stay healthy, but getting that competition that you need? I mean, what's the mindset here from an athlete in your experience and now your experience as a coach with an Olympic athlete?
You know, right now, Ben was out at camp out in Concord, California. They were doing a conditioning phase. I was okay with that. I think he really needs to be ramping up his technique and his drilling, getting his timing down on different things. They're going over to, I think, is it Uzbekistan or somewhere? I don't know where they're going. They're going overseas somewhere for, I think, 3 weeks. I think that's a long time at this point. I don't necessarily agree with it. I think a 2-week trip would have been fine, but it is what it is. I just told him go over there and, you know, stay healthy and keep your mind focused and don't dread anything. Go over there and get the most out of it. You got to be there anyway. So, but when I was competing, we always went over to a tournament during the summer. And it was good because you could kind of test some stuff, see what was working, what wasn't. You know, you got a chance to wrestle a lot of guys who were going to see, you know, maybe a month later. So it's good. It's a pretty cool opportunity to be able to compete and test your skills. But I think the main thing is these guys got to get in the best shape possible. They got to get their bodies ready and keep their minds fresh. And that's the most important thing in the peaking process.
And Mitch, your role as the national team's director the last several cycles, we've got three different styles here. And what was the position from USA Wrestling on, okay, Terry Steiner can do what he wants with the women, you know, whether it be, you know, Bruce Burnett, Zeke Jones, whoever with the freestyle, and Frazier with the Greco. I mean, how did you guys say, all right, coach, do what you need to do for this? Or was there kind of a national idea of, okay, we really need to be training at this point in the year?
Well, if you look at the peaking of training schedules that the all three coaches have, they normally are quite similar. All of them are looking to get some kind of competition. Look at the men's freestyle, got the World Cup coming up there. You know, that's their competition that they've got. And that's about, you know, it's 2 months out. And we're looking at, you know, 6 to 8 weeks of having that. So that fits there. Matt's going over, you know, overseas. And it doesn't always have to be a tournament, but it is competing against international people in a training situation. I don't have Terry's schedule, but I would be surprised if he didn't have a competition within there, because he has in the past. It's just a, basically, it's not something you're winging at right now. The one great thing that the U.S. Olympic Committee does at the beginning of a quadrennium is you sit down and say, what does a podium-ready athlete look like? And then you work back from that to 4 years. And what are you going to do the year prior and the training and competition? And you just work back to today, basically, is what you do. And so all of them have laid that plan out. Now, if you change coaches in the midst of the quadrennium, it could change slightly. But normally it's not the national coach sitting down there in, you know, in a silo making that decision. He's talking with the other coaches on staff, the other coaches, you know, some of the other coaches in the pool. And, you know, most of the time you're going to come out with the same type of response. You know, Dennis is right. Maybe 2 weeks would be better than three. But it's not like I'm not opposed to the trip. I think the trip's good. I'd just rather see 2 weeks over 3 weeks. You know, so there's a lot of most of the people at that level understand what it takes. Now the athletes got to be willing to put in what it takes.
And with that, we'll wrap up episode 29 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. Check out all the resources that the World Wrestling Resource offers at worldwrestlingresource.com. I'd like to thank our sponsor, Defense Soap. Defend what you have built at defensesoap.com. For Mitch Hall and Dennis Hall, I'm Jason Bryant. We'll see you next time.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.